Right.
Okay, it's 7 o'clock, so we'll start our meeting. And good evening, everyone. Thank you for being here at our regularly scheduled village board meeting. It's September 25th at 7 o'clock. I'd ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Brennan. Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Johnson.
Here.
Trustee Bachner. Trustee Gillis.
Here.
Trustee O'Connell.
Here.
President Anducci.
Here. If I could ask you all to please stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance with us.
Pledge of Allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks. All righty. Mindy. Is Mindy here?
Good evening. As I'm sure you can guess, I'm here to talk about River Forest staffing levels.
Go ahead.
You're the only one that giggled.
I get your humor. Yeah.
No, I'm here to talk about flags.
That's even funnier.
I would like the Village Board of Trustees to sponsor a vote and affirmatively vote to raise the Italian American flag in October and the Native American flag in November to celebrate their respective nationally recognized heritage months. Thank you.
Mindy?
We can talk about staffing later.
Yeah, I get her. You. Thanks, Mindy. All right, Kendall? Alexander?
I really just came to listen about the storm drain stuff, but my neighbor Mary told me I had to sign up to speak, so I'll just tell you why I came to listen. Our storm drains are, it can rain for 5 minutes, and they'll be full and overflowing for days. And my plumber told me to find out what the deal was, and I called, and the village said every 3 years they clean them.
Yeah.
They came out and checked ours that's in front of our house, and then a couple months later they did clean them. It makes zero difference. So oh. I'd really like to know what's going on, and make sure something's going to happen to change that. 220 Franklin. Thank you.
Don't need to say that, but you asked, and so she complied. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, okay, we'll keep that. We'll talk to Jeff when he gets up to talk about the village-wide stormwater, so maybe we can address some of that. Okay, that's all I have on the written. Is there anybody else in the audience that want to speak on any issues? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and go to the elected official comments and announcements. Why don't we start out first with Chief O'Shea before we go around the horn so we can also congratulate some of the good work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Yep.
Tonight, I'm honored to be up here to give out a very distinguished award, an award we don't often have an opportunity to come before this body to give out. What's very special about this award is it's being given to an 11-year-old resident. The name of the award is the River Forest Police Department Outstanding Community Member Award. And at this time, I would ask Dominic and his mother and father possibly just to step by the podium here, because I want everyone to see the great people that are all involved in this event.
Yeah, there you go.
Don't hide, Dominic. They're going to want to see you.
Yeah.
Come right up.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Dominic.
So first, I'd just like to share the reason for the award and the description of the events that led to us all being here this evening. The award reads, Dominic Schimmel, age 11, and his family were visiting other family members in Chicago on the evening of August 15th, 2023. Dominic's mother, Catherine, was loading the vehicle in preparation to return home to River Forest. Dominic was seated in the vehicle along with his brother, Drew, age 6, and their dog, Rosie. Suddenly, an offender entered the vehicle's driver's seat and stole the vehicle while Dominic, Drew, and Rosie were still inside. Dominic verbally confronted the offender, and the offender stopped the vehicle. Dominic exited the vehicle and escorted Drew and Rosie to safety. The offender later crashed the car near State Street and 43rd Street in Chicago. The rapid response by the Chicago Police Department and the Illinois State Police resulted in the offender being taken into custody. Dominic, your great awareness, composure, and bravery in the face of danger and uncertainty resulted in your courageous decision to confront the offender. This fearless and selfless response led to Drew, Rosie, and yourself being returned to your family safe and without injury. The vehicle was badly damaged soon after you were able to rescue your family from danger. Dominic Schimmel, your actions are a credit to your family and the Village of River Forest. The Village of River Forest and the River Forest Police Department are proud to have you as a member of our community. Congratulations, Dominic.
Yeah.
So I have the honor this evening of swearing in the oath of office for Dominic, who's going to be sworn in as an honorary junior police officer for the Village of River Forest. Dominic, you ready to, you can just read with me. You ready? I, Dominic Schimmel, having been appointed to the office of honorary junior police officer in the Village of River Forest, affirm that I will support the Constitution of the United States, obey my parents, be kind to others, listen to my teachers, and always behave as a good citizen. And that's all you need to be. Congratulations. I'm gonna and actually I'd like mom to come and pin this on. Now we don't use pins anymore because we remember how dangerous they are. So please clip it on him. It happens the same with the real badges, too. So,
there
so
you go.
If we can give Dominic and family. Is there an opportunity? Would the board like to come up and take a picture with Dominic and family?
Would Dominic, love to have you seen. That would be great. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, how about after, and then we'll just say a few words. So we'll now go to the village trustees' comments. Oh, yeah.
The clerk would just record.
Just record when she walked in.
Trustee Bachman arrived. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No action need be taken.
I think so. Just, yeah. It was like 7:05. Yeah, thanks. Okay, so Bob, do you mind starting?
Good evening. First off, I want to, I had the opportunity to attend with others, the Illinois Municipal League convention last week. And on Saturday, got to be there as our village president handed off the gavel to the new president for IML for 23-24. And Kathy went out with a bang. She provided great leadership to IML, which serves 1,024 towns and communities.
Yeah, 1,200. Just before you all leave, I just want to say thank you so much. Yeah. Congratulations, Dominic. Thank you for the good work that you've done on behalf of the village and your parents and your brother and Rosie. So thank you so much. I totally
exactly.
understand.
Exactly.
Right. I totally thank understand. You, enjoy.
Good. So again, it was a great ceremony. Got to attend a couple of sessions on some development opportunities that other municipalities are undertaking at this time. And it was a great event. And again, congratulations on your year. And now you can get on to staying back here and hanging out with us.
Yeah. Welcome, Matt.
I would also wish you a congratulations. I had a bunch of comments, but Dominic stole them all. So
I know.
I'm going to refrain from saying anything else.
Okay. Thanks, Ken.
Nothing to add. Thanks.
Okay.
Good evening. I just have a couple things. First, the River Forest Collaborative Committee met on September 13th. For those of you who don't know, there's a representative from each of the River Forest public bodies, D90, D200, our library, our township, and I think I'm missing. Oh, and the Park District. Yes. So it was great. We had a little rough start getting together, but everyone happened to be meeting, and we set a schedule for the rest of the year. We basically did introductions on what activities we've been doing as public bodies, and probably going to try to focus at the next meeting on things we can do as a group of all public bodies. So that's it for that. And then unless you were going to do this. Okay. The LRS, just reminding everybody, you should have received a postcard for the from our LRS vendor for the collection of household hazardous waste. You need to call by September the 29th if you have any items that need to be picked up, and it's listed on either on the website as well, and it's out listed on the postcard. But other than that, thank you.
Thanks, Rez. Lisa?
Okay. Again, congrats to Dominic and his family. Congrats to you, Kathy, for a great year as IML president. It was great to see you pass that baton. I want to say congrats to Jeff Loster on his new role, and we'll miss him desperately, but we definitely have to share you with the world. So best of luck on your next stop on your career journey. And last but not least, I just want to basically encourage residents who would like to participate in village government to volunteer for one of our commissions. There's a couple of positions. There's one position open now on sustainability, and I'm sure that there are, that it would be awesome to have a large pool of enthusiastic residents that want to help us govern this village and make it as awesome as it we know it all awesome as it is now and the way we want it to be in the future. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Erica?
I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on lands that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. I too want to echo just all the work, Jeff, that you've done for us. And since I've been here with you, you make it look easy. It's not easy. and then also congrats to Kathy for your tenure at IML as president. Wonderful job.
Thank you. Okay. I don't have much other than saying thank you to my colleagues for acknowledging my role. It was an exciting time, and it's an important role because it matters to our communities and all the communities that are here in Illinois. So it was a pleasure to work with Brad Cole and all the staff in IML to get the job done. So thank you. I appreciate everybody's kind words. That's really all I had. I mean, I spent 4 days, you know, last 4 days at the conference. So it seemed like it consumed me in this last couple of weeks. So other than that, that's all I have to report. So we'll go on to the rest of the agenda, which is a presentation by Jim again on the bike safety program. Kind of excited.
I'm here tonight just to provide an update on the expansion of our bike helmet program for our youth. As you know, the Village Ordinance passed a number of years ago, Village Ordinance 9-4-8, which talks about the need for our youth to be wearing helmets when they're riding bicycles within the village limits. Probably over the past 15 to 20 years, we've had partnerships with regard to helping kids getting these helmets and also identifying and recognizing the good behaviors of a lot of our kids in town that do choose to wear helmets, that are listening to their teachers, that are listening to the students, that are listening to our crime prevention officers at the police department. We'd love to see a lot more, and sometimes it concerns us when we see some large groups of our youth riding around the town and none of them have helmets, or they are the ceremonial because they couldn't leave the house without it, and it's swinging off their handlebar. So these are some of the issues. We try to find positive ways to encourage our youth to wear the helmet. We've been partnered with 7-Eleven, which does Operation Chill for a number of years, in which we give a coupon out. It looks like this. And when we see someone wearing their helmet and they get to go to 7-Eleven and get themselves a Slurpee, a small Slurpee, by the way. Over the years, if you remember, All Heads and Helmets was a program, a volunteer group that was providing helmets for our youth, and they were great. We wish they were still around or someone picked up on some of the good work they did. And also, we are now going to be partnering with River Forest Chocolates. Donna, I'm sure everyone visits River Forest Chocolates, and Donna has offered to partner with the police department as well as Jay from Forest Security. And the program is now up and running. And let me just give you the news. We're still doing Operation Chill, but now it's bike helmets for bonbons. And I know some of the adults might try to jump into this, especially if you had any of Donna's truffles. But this is another way and as Donna described it, a sweeter way to stay safe. Oh, and we're taking great. It right out of her logo. And the whole idea is, once again, when the officers see some of our kids driving, riding on the streets, they have their helmets on, they're rewarded with the bike helmets for bonbons coupon. The officers will put their initials on back of the coupon, and they'll be able to show up by themselves or, of course, with their parents to select their truffle of choice, as I'm trying not to mix my words here. We're very excited about this campaign, and we're hoping it's sort of kind of fills that gap a little bit where right now we can get that next group of kids in town to start wearing those helmets. We know we've had some horrific events here in town regarding kids and bicycles over the years. Luckily, it's been low frequency, but still the officers would feel a lot more comfortable as well as the village board. And I'm sure the parents that these kids are safe out there riding the bike where the most innocent of fall or a shoelace getting caught in a chain can cause a quick and fall to the ground. And having that helmet on really saves your life. Just a couple of the things we've also been doing this year, just as part of the update. We participated in spring of 2023 with the River Forest Community Bike Exchange event and with Roosevelt High School. And we provided bike registration and safety tips in working with that group. Also, Operation Chill went into effect in early spring with 7-Eleven, and that's been so successful at this time with over 100 plus coupons being given out within the past few months with regard to that program alone. Officer Drake, our new crime prevention officer, provided a bike safety class over at Lincoln School just earlier this month. As you know, if you've attended a block party, there's always an officer that shows to help with bike inspections and also to register any bikes that haven't been registered. And to close out the summer, we've now finished our partnership or plan to work with River Forest Chocolates and Forest Security to expand the program, not just for the chocolate, but we have a very generous donor, Jay Rutilli from Forest Security, that has allotted a certain amount of money for the village to go out and purchase bike helmets. And right now we're working with some foundations and some companies itself to find out the best way we can secure those bike helmets, get them in, and further getting more helmets on more of our youth out there. In lieu of, and I know the question is, well, what happens when you see the kids that aren't wearing the helmets? It's an interesting comment. Well, I think we're going to fall on the side of education and warning. And the officers will be giving out some written warnings that will have some friendly, just reminders on there of what the right thing to do. And the officers are always willing to, at that time, take a few minutes to talk with the parents and let them know just the programs we have and why we have them. So once again, I just want to do another shout out to River Forest Chocolates and Donna and Forest Security Jay Rutilli for partnering with us. And this is something that not only the board has talked about, how do we keep our kids a little bit safer, but the village president and I had a recent conversation after I had mentioned that we seem to be having a hard time getting more kids to be wearing their helmets out there. So just an update on where it's going. And this is a great opportunity, once again, to work with some of our local businesses and get a lot more of our kids wearing those helmets. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, as we move towards being that the biking community, they're part of that.
Yeah. Great stuff. I mean, I got a quick question. So once you kind of settle where, with whatever foundation that you might be buying the helmets through, I mean, are you looking to maybe have a session at Roosevelt or Lincoln and Willard to, again, maybe offer the helmets to the kids, say, hey, take one home and wear it when you hop on your bike?
It's a great question. We sort of started that with Officer Drake's safety class. And what we do have to, what we're looking to right now is to work with District 90, some of the other schools, but identify people that need the helmets and not necessarily want the helmet because it looks nice. We do have a local supplier that's willing to work with us. And so we do have one option there. And once again, we're trying to work with some of these other groups where they match the grant or you buy a helmet, they buy a helmet type situation. So we're trying to maximize the donors' money for us. And we will keep the board updated on all the additional safety classes and some of the fun things we're going to be doing as far as a bike rodeo, maybe some auctions and some stuff. We're going to turn it up a little bit, even in the off season. So we're ready for next spring also to get out there and continue to educate everyone. And hopefully we see some improvements either visually or there's a reduction in incidents involving some from our youth on bikes.
Another thing you might want to think about, and forgot to mention that October 1st, I think it's the right day, right, Jessica, that there'll be our artisan market. Actually, we're going to have like a market where vendors will be, we have Spoke Cafe and there's other vendors that will be, we're going to put it right on our parking lot. So right there on Park and Lake right here. So that might be a nice place for our police department and our fire department to show up as well, 9 a.m. October 1st.
That's a great opportunity. We'll also, that reminds me, we will also be participating in the fire department's open house also, in which you will see the bike registrations and the bike helmet program. And of course, giving out those coupons for those in compliance and some warning citations for those that aren't.
Great. By the way, if anybody has an idea for other vendors, I mean, I think they've got a Skonalisa is going to be there. they have a few vendors that Spoke Cafe has tried to get. So if anybody has any ideas, you know, local folks that want to be part of the market, call Jessica and let her know, because she's helping coordinate it. So it's kind of cool. Thanks. And this program is great. So I appreciate, Jim, you picking up. I mean, we've seen just a couple incidents, one is too much when you see someone, a child, get hurt because they didn't wear a helmet. It's preventable. So I appreciate you and the department, and of course, Donna, who's always so generous with her candy and her store, and of course, Forest Security, who's been a good donor to us. So good stuff. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. All right. Okay, I think that ends the presentation. So we'll go ahead and if I can get a motion to approve the consent agenda items A through E.
Motion to approve consent agenda items A through E.
Second. Okay.
Any questions on those consent agenda items? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to please take the vote.
Consent agenda item A, Village Board of Trustee meeting minutes September 11th, 2023. B, monthly department reports. C, financial report, August 2023. D, administration department report. E, engine 23 emergency repairs, $23,302.21. Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So we'll move on to new business, which is item 9A. Can I get a motion? You can just approve 9A, I guess.
Okay. That's fine. I move to approve the purchase of a Stryker Power Lift and Cot, an Aeroclave decontamination unit, and a Zico OTS system, electric oxygen lift from Jefferson Fire and Safety, Inc., not to exceed $68,604.
Second.
Thanks. Any questions for the chief?
I have one. Just real quick.
No, he's got to let him get to the podium because they can't hear it on the YouTube. Huh? Oh, I know. I get a lot of people telling me that. Thanks, Bob.
So, I just had one quick question.
Mm-hmm.
So as I read this, we're going to buy this equipment and we're going to store it on site, or are we going to buy it for future delivery?
No, it will be stored on site here.
Okay.
But again, this is to avoid a 8% price increase.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll have the stuff on hand.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And then just since the residents are listening, could you just describe what it is?
The three items, as you guys well know, last September, we approved to purchase a new ambulance. But with all the supply shortages and things that are going on right now, it's taken us 2.5 years to get delivery on the ambulance. So these are the three items that were included with the ambulance in that purchase. The Stryker cot and power lift are like the ones we have on our current ambulance, but a newer version of them. It's what lifts the cot into the ambulance, which is preventing a lot of back injuries for us now. So the Aeroclave system is a disinfecting system that really took off over the COVID years. So it's a small contained system that we can put in the back of the ambulance after a call. It runs for about how many minutes, Dave? 10 to 15 minutes in the back of the ambulance and disinfects the rear of the ambulance from MRSA to COVID to a number of different viruses and those type of things. And the last item is an electric oxygen lift. So the large oxygen bottles that we need to replace as they empty in the back of the ambulance, the firefighter paramedic can put that on the lift and it lifts it into the ambulance again, preventing back injuries. We are also in the process of working on a grant with IRMA to help pay for a good portion of that lift. And I'm already looking into another grant for possible paying a portion of the Stryker lift system and the cot through IRMA as well. So.
Thank you.
Good explanation. Any more questions, Chief Gardner? OK. Okay. Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to take the vote.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bochner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Okay. So 9B, if I get a motion and a second.
Motion to authorize a village's contracted vendor, Griffin Systems, to install street cameras and related hardware software for $104,873 using money in the fiscal year 2024 Capital Improvement Fund.
Second.
Jim.
So good evening once again. Once a year we do this. This would be the fourth year that I'm up here talking about the consultant's recommendation and a feasibility plan that was done with regard to our street camera system expansion. We are in the last leg of expansion that covers the complete town, and that's the area between Division Street and North Avenue and Harlem and Thatcher, as you can see on the map. As always, we always disclose the locations of where our cameras are going, which are the key entry points in and out of the village or through the village itself. And these will be added onto the same camera system that we've been using approximately for the past 10 years. So just a really quick, I know you guys have been through this before. Just to show some of the capabilities of our cameras, full zoom, mid zoom, and then full zoom. The technology is been phenomenal, and they've been a great group to work with. The cameras are used for a multitude of reasons. You guys are familiar with that. But one of the things, it really creates greater accountability out there for officers and transparency out there for the officers with regard to them knowing those cameras are out there, and the public knows that they have the ability to where our government is reviewing not only what the officers are doing, but what's occurring on the streets. And that's multidisciplined. That's just not law enforcement. And once again, the recorded incidents are used also as part of evidence with regard to arrests or crimes can be used in actions that the village may be using with regard to ordinance violations and other incidents, but they're really used throughout the day as part of our normal operations. Just a little recap here. The Lake Street Corridor, the initial system was 20 PTZ cameras. The South Zone phase added 14 PTZs and multi-head cameras. The Middle Zone, which is what the board approved last year, was 14 PTZs and multi-head cameras. The North Zone, as was also proposed in the FY24 CIP, 11 PTZ and multi-head cameras. So you can see that they've really been spread out for not only budgetary reasons, but also to harness any software or hardware upgrades that have been going on in the industry. We talked a little bit about the cameras' use. Where are they monitored? You can see them right from the second floor of the police station. I know some of you have had a chance to see the monitors up there, the report writing room, the police administrative areas, and also all the officers on their laptops in the car had the ability to view these cameras. A lot of success stories. We won't go into them for tonight, but I will share with you, since 2016, we've processed nearly 3,000 video requests with regard to our system, and it's been used with regard to documenting critical incidents, as far as fatal car accidents or other incidents where someone was looking to see if there was a camera that caught the incident or viewed part of the incident within our public areas. Just to go on to critical or very rough side of sometimes the things that are caught, this was a four-car or four-person fatal accident a number of years ago. If you recognize the area, it's right in front of the old Starbucks. In here is theft offenders being taken into custody and connecting the dots, which means someone may come in one part of the town, commit a criminal act, move to another part of the town, and then eventually exit the town. We have the ability to search through those cameras, see if we can find the vehicles and individuals, and create sort of a breadcrumb trail of what's their movements within the village to see if there's additional victims or whether or not there's additional witnesses or evidence that was dropped along the way. Emergency management, once again, it's not just for police use. It's multidisciplinary, including the fire department and public works that have access to view these cameras or request footage also. And once again, you can see the full transparency there. Here's two different departments for a village working out there hand in hand, and you're able to see what they're doing and how they're responding to these critical incidents. The project vendor and system support has been through Griffin Systems, and we've been very fortunate to have a good working relationship and then provide a proven product. And just last note, for those that were looking at the numbers in the CIP budget, it was projected initially that we would be asking for $107,000. The project estimate came in a little bit less from the vendor based on some of the supply chains opening up a little bit and parts opening up, and we'll be coming in at $104,873 for this final full phase of the project. And at this time, if there's any questions, I'll be more than glad to entertain them.
Yeah, yes, Ken.
I just had one quick one. Just curious, do you find that, you know, insurance companies are contacting you to ask you to, you know, provide tape for them, or like, does it get too burdensome? Like, do residents ask you for, you know, previously recorded tapes or anything?
You know, it has not become burdensome at this time. And in fact, we're always trying to improve the technology on the processing of those requests and how quickly we can download videos, record them to either secure servers through our other public partners, Cook County State's Attorney's Office, Attorney General's Office, Illinois State Police. With regard to insurance companies, they have made some requests, and we do provide those requests based on our FOIA requirements.
For the six locations that you showed, it looked like there were 11 cameras. So is there going to be like two cameras in one place? So, example, North and Harlem.
Sure. North and Harlem will have two cameras pointing different directions based on, you know, the intersection area. You're going to have one covering more Harlem, one covering more North Avenue. The sort of the unique one is if you can picture the T intersection of Division and Thatcher. We're having what's called a multi-head, three-head camera was much more cost-effective, and also from a viewing standpoint was a much better product to use up there. So that's where we only were installing one camera.
Gotcha.
So that's where instead of 12, it ended up being 11. So the other locations will have those two PTZs as mentioned.
Great, thanks.
Questions? Yeah, great. Right. Then I'd ask the clerk to take the vote.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Jim. Okay. So 9C, there's no action here. We'll ask Jeff to come on up and talk about our village-wide stormwater master plan update.
Sure. Good evening. As you all know, back in 2021, the village started a stormwater master plan project. This was in response to some heavy rainfall events that we experienced and then some associated sewer backup and general localized flooding. The goal of that project is essentially to analyze the village's sewer system, figure out where the capacity issues are, and what, if anything, can be done about that. As part of that initial effort, there were two resident meetings that were held. We solicited some feedback from residents at that time and then kicked off the project. The initial project efforts included mostly sewer modeling and flow monitoring. The consultant had, they put in monitors in the sewers, and then we have a weather station on the roof, so they were able to see how the sewer system was reacting to actual weather events. Allowed them to create a stormwater, a model of our sewer system throughout the village, which kind of carries the project forward from there. Once we had completed that work, the consultant from Christopher Burke Engineering, who we're working with, Jeff Jokowski, came in here, I believe it was in March of this year, and presented their findings to the board. I don't know if you recall, there were some projects discussed, south end of town, the middle of town from about Division to Lake Street was split into two sections. And then we have the north side of town. He presented some of the technically feasible projects that could be done, as well as some very rough cost estimates associated with those projects. During that discussion that the board was having at that time, one of the suggestions was that staff go out and have another resident meeting to gather more feedback now that we had some cost ideas and project scopes to discuss. So earlier this year in August, I believe it was on August 1st, we had that third public meeting and we did receive some feedback. Generally speaking, the feedback that we received was kind of localized around the high price tag of the conceptual projects that were identified. And the other thing we heard was a desire for the village currently has three subsidy programs where we help fund replacement of lead water services, help prevent sewer backup currently, and then a sewer lateral. So your pipe that goes from your house out to the sewer main in the street, if there's damage on your lateral under the street, the village has a subsidy program to help defray costs from that as well. So one of the things we heard from the residents that were at this meeting was this desire to have a fourth subsidy program to help address localized private property stormwater flooding. So those were kind of the two main points of feedback we did receive. So at this time, staff and our consultant at Burke, we're at a position where kind of need to start to wrap up this project and kind of finalize those things that are hanging out there. And obviously we want to make sure that whatever the remaining steps are aligned with the board's goals. So again, no motion is required tonight, but we're looking for some feedback from the board and general consensus as to where we go, what the best way to close out the project is. So based on the response that we got in the three neighborhood meetings that we had, it was not overwhelming. And this was after, if you remember, we had some pretty substantial rain events in July of this year. We kind of purposely pushed that neighborhood meeting back to August, hoping that we'd get some, you know, late summer rains in there. And we did. Not an overwhelming level of people coming in and demanding that something be done. So it would seem that the conceptual level of the projects as they currently stand in the project, it might be prudent to maintain them as such in the project. That will live on forever as a working document. And should the village choose to undergo some work down the line, got the projects ready to go and we can dive into design. We have some other administrative items, staff review, ordinance reviews, subsidy program reviews, proposed or existing. We can close those items out in the meantime, try to gain some traction on a more short-term basis. And then if the board at any point in the future chooses to move forward with an actual engineering project, the board could move forward with design at that time. So again, we're just seeking some feedback from the board based on that. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have, but we want to make sure that the nature in which the project is closed out is aligned with how the board would like us to proceed. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Yeah, I have one, Jeff. I mean, I hear you about some public interest, and sometimes we don't get enough people at our meetings, but when there's an incident, we get a ton of people at our meetings. So I don't really take a lot of stock in the fact that, you know, people didn't show up as a indicator of their lack of interest. I think it's more of it doesn't affect me right now, but it could. So my question is, based on your professional opinion and your department's professional opinion and the study that we've had from Chris Burke and the allocation of what he said in terms of what they said in terms of, you know, some of our, our sore spots. I don't know what else to call them, or our opportunities. Are you saying that from your professional opinion, you haven't seen anything that you would say recommend us looking at anything in the next 2 to 3 years?
No, I certainly can. Multiple conceptual capital improvement projects were identified. Like I said, the south end of town was identified. There are some relief sewers down at the south end of town. The project that Burke identified down there was to kind of expand upon that network.
Right.
The middle of town was much more difficult. So that price tag was much, much greater. The north end of town, we've still got phase two of the sewer separation project up there. So all of those projects remain in a hopper that can be explored at any point in time. If the board would like to, if there's a priority, if there's a desire to explore any of those at this time, we certainly can do that. We start to break off into other contracts, if you will. We would have to start to get into actual phase one engineering, because everything right now is extremely conceptual. So if there is a desire to proceed with any one of those project components, certainly can. I would ask the board which areas you all would like to prioritize, because we would have to start to work up and head in a direction to proceed with
those. I guess I'm saying it differently. I'd say, what would you do, in your professional opinion, as our public works director, give the board in terms of things we ought to be looking at 2 to 3 years from now, so that we don't have an incident where we have our residents, 100 of them here, talking to us about why didn't we look at this? I mean, I think it needs to I mean, sure, we know what we like, you know, but we also don't know what we don't know. And so I'm asking you, what should we know and what should we look at so that we are on top of what should be the next phase?
Sure.
And Kathy, if I can add, and then what priority?
And what priority? Thank you.
One of the things that was discussed back in March when Christopher Burke Engineering was present to provide that presentation was the level of protection is a stormwater term. Typically, and we talked about this a little bit in March, typically if we're designing a new subdivision right now, stormwater infrastructure is designed to protect against a 10-year event. So that's new infrastructure. One of the things that Jeff from Christopher Burke was talking to about during his presentation was what level of protection the board would like to achieve. Would the board like to see no sewer issues ever, and we're trying to go to the maximum level possible? Is the board okay with a 10-year level of protection? It's a sliding scale. You can scale projects up, you can scale them down to a certain degree. There are some restrictions. River Forest is pretty landlocked. But it depends. I mean, if we want to just chip away at this and make ground as we go, we could start at the south end of town, because that's a little more of that project, if you will, is a little more compartmentalized, where we can start to pick off, well, we can expand on the relief sewer network on this street as part of our resurfacing project next year. And we can pick little parts of that apart. If we wanted to go in the middle of town and said, now between Lake Street and Chicago is our biggest priority, okay, that's a different project altogether. This is not apples to apples, right? That project is more of an all-in. It's kind of akin to the Northside stormwater separation project. We didn't just pick off little bits of that at a time. That was a whole hog. We have to do the whole thing all at once kind of project. So, again, I'm happy to provide as much information as I can, but it ultimately is going to depend on what level of protection the village wants to achieve with this project.
I hear you. I mean, I think we're all pretty smart around the table here, but the question becomes, what level of protection should we be at? It can't be 100%. We know that. And in your professional opinion, what level of protection would you recommend a village or a city to say, here, this is where you ought to think about? Not that we're going to even do that, but I mean, I'm not an engineer. I'm not a public works person. I know finance, and I know the value of money, but I can determine that once you tell me where we ought to land.
Well, I would start with the projects that Burke identified. Those projects that came with, I think, total a price tag of close to $175 million, that didn't quite get us to 10-year everywhere throughout the village, 10-year level of protection. So I think that's the best starting point. Again, it's not 10-year, but a 10-year level of protection is ideal for if, you know, there are no external factors and money's not an object. You know, the projects that Burke identified were identified because that was roughly the capacity that could kind of fit within the roadways and within, you know, assuming the park district would be amenable to adding some sort of storage facility under Keystone Park. Those projects were identified for specific reason, because that was kind of the, might sound ironic, but it's the most cost-effective way to gain as much ground in a stormwater capacity sense. Trying to reach beyond that is just, again, if that's what the board would like to do, we can do that. The price tag goes up, the difficulty in implementing it goes up. But to me, the projects that were identified as part of the Burke presentation is the starting point. And if the board said that's too much money, we you know, or not a high enough level of protection, we can start to move in one direction or the other. But that's where I would start, because there was a reason we came to that conclusion initially.
Yeah. I seem to recall this conversation and having the concern that it's 10 years protection today. What is it going to look like 15, 20 years from now? Is that going to be like 2 or 3 years? Because we know what the environment is doing. Sure. So trying to, you know, imagine 20 years from now, because this infrastructure stays, you know, with us. Should we be thinking about more than 10 years? My assumption is yes, but.
And I think there's opportunity to, this is a long drawn out project, right? This is not something that would be completed in 3-4 years. You know, I think that's something that could be accommodated on an individual project basis. So as each one of these projects gets picked off, if a particular project calls for a 36 inch pipe, you know, that's easily something that can be worked out during a design phase where we could go, okay, well, what's the cost differential between 36 and a 42 inch pipe or a 48? And is that technically, is it physically feasible in the space that we're looking at? Does that make sense from a cost perspective? And then what's that added level of protection that it provides? But it's hard to do that on a global scale with this because, like I said, the projects themselves are not even necessarily comparable. They're completely different ways to attack the problem. But I think that could be addressed on a case-by-case basis as each project is picked off. And one of the other things that I just want to point out real quickly is that traditionally stormwater has been kind of assessed during rainfall data as a component of studying stormwater capacity. And Bulletin 70 was the old kind of mathematical way of saying a 24-hour 100-year event is, you know, basically this much rainfall. Within the last few years, that's been updated to accommodate and account for rather much more recent rainfall data, which is kind of increasing at a more exponential, less linear level. Yeah. So we've tried to accommodate as much current information as possible to help future proof things as much as possible. But if things continue to change at a nonlinear level, to your point, it still becomes more difficult.
And how much of an issue is it if we do specific projects and we decide, yes, we can do a 42 or 40 inch, 46 mm-hmm. inch here, but over here, you know, we're only really going to be able to accommodate a 32. Does that hurt the master plan at all?
No, I mean, I think you would start, everything's still conceptual at this point. So even the general scale of what's called for in these projects that we have before us as of today, there could still be reasons where we go, okay, right now in the middle of town, they were calling for potentially, you know, big vaults under roadways. Well, maybe there is some reason that that can't be accomplished and it would have to be a much smaller vault on only half of the road. So it's still a sliding scale, but I think until you get into actual design, it's going to be tough to know any of those with any certainty.
Okay.
But I don't think it would be difficult once you do get into that design to scale up if that's something that the board chooses to do at that time.
Okay. Thanks.
Sure.
I had just one more question. I realize that no municipality is exactly alike, but were there any comparables offered or what other communities are doing or what people found successful? Specifically, you know, one thing was more successful than the other, or are people, is the average the 10-year program? Was any of that brought up or?
A lot of it becomes taking advantage of whatever space you have. Physical space is usually the limiting factor. I was at a floodplain conference back in March, and it was a really great presentation. Wilmette is in the middle of a stormwater master plan. They're implementing projects, and they installed several underground massive vaults to store stormwater. And I joked with somebody sitting next to me, I said, this is perfect. It's exactly what I needed to hear. I just need a 13-acre park now that I can go mm-hmm. stick all these vaults under. You know, they had a separate sewer system, so they can, controlling stormwater is a lot easier. Everything we have south of the separated section up north, everything is combined. So we can't just put that in a detention basin in a park either. So it is a little more nuanced. There's just not a lot of space. So one of the things that I spoke to with Burke a lot about was how do we approach, and this was early on in the project, how do we approach the project? Do we try to come out of the gate and say, we want to achieve a 10-year level of protection. Where does that get us? And then we'll see if the board wants to go up from there or down. And it very quickly became apparent that that was not a good approach because everything is so built out and tight here. It becomes more of a, where are these little nooks and crannies that we can take advantage of? Because that's going to, not the best we can do, but that's our starting point. So that's why we end up with things under the roadway and, you know, Keystone Park and these little bits of green space that we have. Again, those projects were identified because based on elevation and which direction the sewers are flowing in, these are kind of, they'd be quickly become very limited in what the actual technically feasible projects we can do. Thank you. But yes, there are plenty of other communities that are doing stormwater master plans and implementing them at this time. They all tackle them differently.
And Jeff, I just want to make sure I heard you correctly, that if it's like, it was like we're starting from scratch, is the standard today, I know it'll change 10 years.
That's typically the goal with stormwater management.
Okay, thank you.
About answering their resident question.
Yes, absolutely. And I don't want to imply that, you know, any of this gets shelved or put off or, you know, again, this is a multi-year project, so to speak. So in the meantime, we're going to have plenty of kind of more localized issues. And I don't know the details. I'll certainly get your information before we go. You know, laterals can collapse, and it sounds like our operations team has looked into some of this already. So laterals can collapse. Catch basins themselves can kind of just get clogged up. We have debris snouts on some of these things that they're supposed to keep debris out. Sometimes that doesn't happen. It gets in and it gets clogged. And it could be a sewer capacity issue. Down at the south end of town, like I said, there's some relief sewer down there already. So that was actually one of the better looking portions of the village in terms of general sewer capacity that exists as of today. So I would be surprised if this were an issue of the sewer main constantly not having capacity. And so it's backing up. We would see universal backup up and down the block. But absolutely, we're going to have to triage kind of individual localized issues from now until eternity. That's never going to change, and certainly happy to do so in the meantime.
Huh. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it sounds like it might be nuanced. Like you said, who knows? Even though after cleaning, you're still getting ponding. Yeah, you. Yeah. Yes, of course.
They were great when I called. I don't really think that it's still back.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, what the issue?
I don't know what happened next.
Well, you being here helps. We'll. Yeah, of course, and that's what happens. So don't worry about it. But the fact that you're here tonight, you know, Jeff, Jessica, you can follow up with the resident, and we can just maybe zero in on what that issue is, because it sounds like it's something odd's going on. So we'll dig into that for sure for you.
Yeah, so I guess I would just throw back out to the board. I mean, if there's any priorities that you all, in terms of portions of town, if that makes it easier, is there an area where you would like to see more effort expended? You know, wrapping up this project in its current form does not preclude the village from proceeding in any one direction or another. I just want to make sure that even if we call it hitting the pause button on actual conceptual in the ground projects and close out the administrative items of the stormwater master plan, this is all still moving in the same direction of progress. I just want to make sure that we're not working with a consultant to wrap up administrative items when you all are potentially sitting here saying, no, why are we not, you know, addressing stormwater in the middle of town between Lake and Oak Street, Oak Avenue, or something like that. So unless there's a dire desire to move forward in any one direction, we can always come back and have additional conversations about staff recommended priorities or more specifics related to projects, if that's what the board.
Well, my thinking is we should do these smaller issues and items by matter of just getting them done. I think the bigger item is, where do we go? What's the priority? I think we need to have more conversation. I mean, our job as village board president is to make sure that our community is not only safe, but it's that, you know, the sewers are running. And so, there are, luckily we don't have much flooding, but I'm, you know, because we have a grading ordinance and other things that we put in place that have, and shared programs, which I think have helped our community work out some of the flooding. So I think we're in good shape for there, but still, as you know, 5 years from now, you know, we should allow our board, whatever that looks like, you know, the ability to implement a sewer plan. I mean, there's grants out there from MWRD and other places that perhaps we should look as well. So not that they will fund 100%, but maybe some portion of it. I just think what we should always keep it to at the top of our list, so that we never not have an eye on our sewer systems. And I know it doesn't sound sexy and nice, but I mean, it is something we're responsible for.
Are you suggesting so to start taking some small bites out of the apple?
Well, what they recommend, so what Jeff and the team are recommending are not bad. I mean, they recommend a potential ordinance modification. I'm kind of interested in right. what that might be. They provide analysis of the Des Plaines River and the effects on the groundwater. That's interesting. You know, provide a narrative of the interaction between Village and MWRD. Which I think that's key.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, given kind of, and again, funding is always going to be part of this conversation at some point in time. But, you know, I don't know that given where the economy is and the interest rates are and bond issues and all those things, that we're ready to jump into a huge thing. And so, you know, it's maybe that's the way to do is because to your point is we have to do something because if we just let it sit, we're just kicking the can down the road.
And, right. And I'm not saying we do it tomorrow.
No, I know.
Say you shouldn't like be on the back burner.
No, I totally agree. Totally agree.
Yeah, that's all.
So. But I mean, maybe that's the way we direct staff is let's take a look at some of the smaller things. And to your point is what grants are out there that we can start doing this. And then as things turn around a little bit, hopefully, you know, and the, you know, bonds get better and, you know, interest rates get better that, you know, Absolutely. We can start working on the bigger stuff.
Absolutely. That's how we did all of our alleys is we took out a 20 year bond. So low interest rate. So we moved all that up. To do the alley improvements, and it worked out really, really well. So, yes, and we would be absolutely cognizant of the market.
I do think a staffing level analysis is really important for us to determine, like, if we are going to attack the middle or the north, you know, like, what would be prioritized there? Are there certain places, like, is you know, having the most issues, you know, understanding the cost for each of those different parts, and again, to your point, for those items, are there ways where we can chip at it even if we're not going to do a big thing for another 3-4 years?
Right.
I guess I'd be interested in completion of that stormwater master plan. Would that pretty much indicate what everything we're supposed to be doing from now until 10 years from now or 20?
So the stormwater master plan is just kind of the nomenclature for the entirety of all of this conversation. So that includes the capital improvement projects, the staffing level analysis.
Okay.
And I neglected to add into that list. I don't know how. One of the things we asked Burke to look at was just kind of a rough feasibility look at the potential for a stormwater utility fee as well. So as a funding mechanism. So, yes, all of those things are the stormwater master plan.
Okay.
That sounds, I think, reasonable.
Actually, I just have one more question because, like, I know what, like, so is part of this then to ultimately map out the 10 years? I mean, at the end of the day, I know that we have to wait, but we should have the project plan that we then kick off.
I think that's what Jeff is saying. I mean, what do you guys want? You know, and I don't know if we're there yet to say, oh, we, you know, we want to, unless you think you are.
No, I'm not saying kick it off, but know what we're going to do in the order in which we're going to do it so that we can start doing it. Because if we wait 10 years, we're going to need it in 5.
Oh, yeah. I think that was my earlier question. I mean, what should we do in your professional opinion? And res added priority. I think that's the question.
And those projects that are identified, even though they're conceptual, that is kind of the roadmap, right? That's the roadmap that we have. Unless anybody wants changes, that is the map that's being created. So that will always, that's not going away in any way, shape, or form. That will be wrapped in as part of the stormwater master plan. I just want to make sure that while we're wrapping up the administrative items, the board isn't going, well, why aren't we proceeding with getting shovels in the ground in the middle of town or at the north end of town or at the south end of town? I just want to make sure us closing out this project is aligned with that. So yes, that roadmap never goes away at this point. That's established.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a fair thing. I don't think any one of us around this table is saying, why aren't we doing a sewer separation project down south or something? I mean, until we have an event and then it's going to be another issue. but hopefully not. So, but we understand.
Okay.
Clearly, that's not going to happen, and you know, and but what I'm saying is it can't go way in the back burner. I think we just got to keep it. You know, when we talk about capital
projects,
or when we talk about, you know, operations, you know, this is something we want to continue to take a peek at.
Understood.
And maybe when economics get better, that would be the time to do it. So, all right. That's great. Thanks, Jeff. Any further questions for Jeff? All right. Okay. Well, that concludes. Thank you. That includes our no executive session. So unless anybody has anything for the good of the order, I'll ask for a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. Take this.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
President Medusi.
Yes. Okay.
Meeting adjourned.
Good night.